Good morning. It's a Friday, the 12th of May. Joining us this morning, Humble Bay Fire Chief Sean Robertson. Good morning.
Good morning.
We having fun?
So far, it's great.
Good. Good. Yeah. 10 seconds in, we're still having fun.
That's right.
It's a kind of a monumental moment. Are you ready for why do we say that?
Yes, I am.
Are you? Okay. Highball. Not. You probably have just heard the reference rather than experienced the reference. Don't tell me you don't know what a highball is.
The only highball reference I'm aware of is related to alcohol.
It could be, huh?
I don't know what that means or its origin.
Oh, well, this is a different definition of it, so we'll move on. This has got a marine theme to it.
Well, let's hear it.
No, you sure?
At least I'll know something.
All right.
I do come here for
purpose?
Enlightenment. Yeah.
No matter what the make or model of your car, when you get in a hurry, you're in danger of being stopped for highballing, is what it says. I've never heard that phrase. You sure you want to continue?
I do not want to continue.
Okay. Let's find something that's a little bit more a little bit more appropriate. How's that?
Sounds good.
All right. Oh. Eggs Benedict. Oh, wait. We did that one. Okay. There was a question mark. I just didn't know. Never mind. Do you want Eggs Benedict? You can have Eggs Benedict this because it's a Friday morning.
All right.
All right. Why do we say Eggs Benedict? Where'd that phrase come from?
I assume after...
Being right across the street from Denny's, I'm sure that you've experienced Eggs Benedict a couple of times.
Famous chef named Benedict came up with the recipe.
You may have been listening to a previous show.
Yeah, that or Benedictine monks after they, you know, had a long night.
You did listen to a previous show because that's
beer.
The other potential definition of this
after
thing.
After brewing beer, they had some delicious Eggs Benedict.
Legend suggests... that Saint Benedict is responsible for the combination of foods that seem to bear his name. Oh. Oral tradition, long current in greater New York City, credits the term to a wealthy Samuel Benedict, about whom little is known. Many scholars say that neither the saint nor the New Yorker had anything to do with creating and naming the perennially popular dish. Instead, they say it stems directly from the culinary interests of banker yachtsman E.C. Benedict. He inherited a Connecticut fortune. Boy, that would be a biggie, wouldn't it? I mean, if it's a fortune and it's in Connecticut. Mm. Yeah, okay. And reached the zenith of his power in commercial circles around the turn of the century. Benedict then began spending more and more time on the water. It was on his yacht, says an account that stems from about 1902, that the man whom friends called Commodore insisted that hollandaise sauce be added with the long-standard poached eggs on toast with ham. When guests tried the new delicacy, they took to it like ducks on water. As a result, we still use the water-loving banker's name to designate the dish that is high on the list of many favorite foods.
Wow, that's really interesting.
So there's three possibles, and you got two out of three.
Great. That's a win for me.
I guess I better not repeat these things.
Where does hollandaise sauce come from? Holland?
I don't know. I don't like that stuff. The first time
it,
I had
it, is rich, yeah.
Grandma put it on asparagus, and I, at that time, liked asparagus. I still do now, but
yeah.
There was a long decades where I wasn't not a fan at all.
Okay.
And it was like, what is this?
Hmm.
The little bit of tang to it? It was like, no. So it kept me away for about 25, 30 years.
Interesting.
Not that I have a tough time releasing on things.
No, I'm sure you don't.
Yeah. Kind of like fruit in Stolen. You know, I mean, some people just don't get it.
They don't. But it is a delicious sweet bread. No matter what you put in, it's going to taste good.
Yeah, fair enough. Oh, boy. Saw the big truck running yesterday. I forget where I was. How long does it take those guys to learn how to drive that thing?
Well.
Either the front or the back?
It can take 2 weeks to a month. We have a task book that lays out what things need to be done, and it culminates with 2 hours of night driving, and then
just for giggles, it at nighttime instead of where there's more traffic.
Well, nighttime your peripheral vision changes, so
that's more challenging than having a lot of cross traffic and people walking around and that kind of stuff?
I don't think it's more challenging. It's just a different aspect.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just you need to know how to drive at night because...
Night vision, okay.
The whole goal is when you are driving to an emergency, you've...
Get there?
You've experienced all the conditions you may be driving at. Yeah, exactly. You get there. Yeah.
Oh, so about a month of just kind of driving around?
Yeah, basically.
Now, two guys can't fit in that back spot.
No. We did have a training tiller when we first...
Oh, really?
We were going to tiller, and it did have... It was not an enclosed tiller cab. It was open, but there was two seats there because it was a training tiller.
So somebody kind of hung out over the edge?
It was pretty close to the edge, yeah. It was a little seat. You probably couldn't have fit in that seat.
Well, good. Yeah. There are a lot of things I can't fit into, I'm finding out. Thanks for bringing that one up, too.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's definitely different. And the faster the tractor driver goes, the more... challenging it is because you obviously have to react quicker and anticipate things.
Yeah, I would think a small movement has bigger impact.
Exactly.
Just because it's magnified.
Yeah, and any corner you're accelerating, and because you're so further back, it's magnified as well.
Have you ridden in the back?
Yes, I went through the training myself several years ago.
What was it like?
It was at first it was pretty intimidating because you've got to be ready to go. And
because it's not where you are, it's where you're going, right?
Yeah, and it's a little counterintuitive to how you usually drive because you're steering the opposite way to the direction you're going.
So it's kind of like a forklift.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's enjoyable.
Would you feel comfortable climbing back on it now?
Yeah, I'd have to, you know, get a little
at night.
I get some hours of, or maybe an hour of getting back into it.
Is that one of the things with the training? I know there's a lot of tabletop and a lot of at the training grounds, but maintaining that kind of ongoing, just in the nuance areas, you're not the primary. You may not even be the secondary, but your number could still be drawn to do whatever this thing is.
Right.
Is it easy to maintain those competencies as well as the primary ones that are used on a more regular basis?
We do try to build it into our training program. For example, some of the things we don't use very often, like confined space entries or high angle rope rescue, we'll do that on a 2-year basis.
Okay, the rope rescue. That's not that thing in junior high where you had to try to go up the rope, is it?
No, it's more to get...
I can't imagine a guy with gear on being able to do that unless you've got somebody who is like an Olympic weightlifter.
Well, we don't wear all the heavy turnout stuff. That's more where we just have lighter weight protective equipment.
Is it going up or coming down?
It's usually coming down. Because we'll...
I've been able to master that one.
Yeah. We're
it's the bounce I haven't figured out yet.
Yes. Yeah, it depends on the scenario, that's for sure.
Oh, we'll be back with more from Sean. It's 8.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets. More than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time is 8:24. We're back talking shop. Wait a minute, it's 8:23, right?
It is.
I don't know. The clock's around here. The gnomes have struck.
Again?
Yeah. Jerks.
Maybe it's because you still have that sign out front.
I thought I took that down.
Oh, I didn't notice it today. I'll check on the way out.
Yeah, I think. Oh, maybe that's it. Maybe it's the curse.
Or maybe they're mad because you took it down.
Could be.
Showed lack of respect. I think those gnomes hold grudges.
Yeah. Well, I almost used a colorful.
I'm impressed.
You know, it probably isn't something that wouldn't be said later in the day, but not here, not
okay.
now.
Good.
Oh, boy. So we have heard from the city manager that the city is in pretty solid financial stead right now in Eureka. But you ain't just city anymore. How is the fire district side of things? Is that affected at all because of the way that funding is attached to the property?
Yeah,
property tax?
The fire district is funded primarily by property tax. And then we have two benefit assessments.
Benefit assessment.
And then we get Prop 172 money.
You know what benefit assessment district is long for?
I don't.
Oh, come on. You can spell with the best of them.
That's a reason why I didn't make that association.
Yeah, but now it's there, isn't it?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay, everybody else, you can figure out the acronym. Yeah. Benefit Assessment District. All right. Go on.
Yeah. Although you don't really combine those three words.
Not normally, but I think they're hyphened right now.
Assessment.
Oh, that's what it is.
That's right. But to answer your question, with some of the resolution at the county level, property tax revenues becoming a bit more consistent, we're still seeing some revenue that essentially has not been returned to us, and I assume other entities, for the last couple of years.
Is that the county holding it up, or is that state?
It's the county, because they're the treasury.
Because of the snafu?
Yeah, just because of the internal issues. We're finally, that's getting
reconciled. You're paying attention to that, too.
I am, yep.
How many dollars, do you have any idea what the anticipated amount
it
is?
It might be close to, you know, 100, 150,000.
Oh, so it's enough to get excited about when the check shows up.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I bet you'd even offer to volunteer to swing by and pick it up.
I would do that. Yeah. It's not too far away.
Because you're a nice guy.
Well, you know, try to be efficient. It's one of our core values. But yeah,
but that's not enough. I mean, you're not going to go out and buy a new truck or anything like that with it, are you? It just kind of backfills in some of the shortfalls in the budget that were anticipated to be filled.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because with the district and its ability to be singularly focused, we're able to plan for those big purchases much better. And
what's the next one?
Well, we have a new engine on order right now. It's finally getting
regular old fire truck.
Yes. So that should be here in January. The timeline for that has almost doubled. I think we're going to be 2 years out from when we ordered it.
Is it resource or supply chain issues, or is it staffing at the fire truck making factory?
It's more the supply chain issues, because, again, everything on this production line is dependent on that. So when you had those delays, it backed everything up. So any new orders are going to have to just fit into that. At some point, you'd hope they would catch up. But
yeah, depending on where the resources are coming from.
Yeah, yeah. But so that's on the way. And then after that, we'd probably need a new water tender, because ours is quite old at this
point. So it's rolling stock rather than some of the infrastructure.
Yeah, I mean, infrastructurally wise, the two stations have gotten some major renovations in the last 10 years.
Two stations, aren't there four?
The district has
five.
Two. The city.
Oh, you're focusing district.
Yes, and then the city owns three.
Yeah, so there's five total, right?
Correct.
Notice how I count to five.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I was doing it on my hands, and I came out with a couple extra.
Well, yeah.
Maybe it's in the future.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like cutting the station.
Infrastructure-wise, the city stations are going to get renovated this year.
All of them?
All three of them have different types of renovations.
So what's going to happen to the one by the cemetery? Is it going to get blown up or blown bigger? I'm sure it's a historical building and some of those kinds of restrictions also, but what can you do to that without just blading it and starting all over? Or is that the plan?
That is not the plan, because that would be very expensive. But the plan is to essentially add another, just expand it a bit internally.
Same exterior walls?
Pretty much the same exterior walls, but there may be some adjustments, but it won't be more than a couple of feet to push those out. And it would only be on one side.
Probably on the cousin's side, where there's lawn right now?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Huh? Yeah. Somebody in here is paying attention.
That's right. Looked at that Google Earth perspective.
I just walked by it often.
No. Yeah, there's a lot of space out there. And yeah. In the back, there's some space, too, in this little covered area.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Chief Sean from Humboldt Bay Fire. With some of the funding challenges that other fire departments have, is there a ripple effect with all the MOUs that the departments have with one another? If you're down three, say, and they leave the area, does that impact everybody else also, because you then have to reach out more frequently, or maybe you don't have specialists that somebody else has got, and everybody in the region kind of takes a hit when somebody leaves?
Yes. And that's primarily based because the mutual aid agreement, especially here in the North Bay, is if you're unable to fill or unable to send them a unit, then they'll just move to the next agency.
Dispatch does that just
automatically? Yeah, Cal Fire Dispatch. So, you know, you can just think a lot of it is in, like I said, the North Bay. So they'll request the closest units. So if it's anything in Arcata, they're going to call in Fieldbrook, Samoa, and us, and Blue Lake. And if we're unable to respond, then they're going to start reaching further afield, further north. So it definitely affects everybody else. And then if they're unable, multiple are unable to respond, then it just puts a bigger burden on who does go. So Samoa, for example, goes to Manila and Arcata pretty regularly. And so that they're still a volunteer agency and they're supplying that resource. But it just puts a burden on their district, because when they're at that incident, they're unable to respond to their jurisdiction.
Right, there's that whole ripple
effect. So then if there's an incident there where they need help, then someone else is going to have to come and cover it. So, yeah, it definitely creates an issue.
Do the volunteer departments respond to medical aid?
Yes.
So they have the same areas of responsibility, I guess, that paid departments do?
Yes.
Except their staff is all over the place?
Yeah, they're based on a pager system, so they may either go directly to the scene or they will go to the fire station to get on the apparatus.
So they don't have to run with three on board like you guys do?
No. No, they...
You have a driver.
Yeah.
And everybody kind of meets them at the location.
Yeah. My experience is from when I was a volunteer, so I may not
be... A little dated?
A little dated. But we would respond directly to the scene for medical calls, but if it was any kind of fire or rescue or traffic collision, we would go to the fire station because we would need the apparatus.
Right, somebody's got to get it there.
Yeah, and yeah. Because then the assumption is the paid people, and again, this is only for Arcata because this doesn't pertain to any other entity, although the chiefs in the other volunteer agencies will generally have a duty vehicle with medical equipment on it. And so they would be responding, and so then you would respond and assist them with that equipment.
That's what I was thinking. So like Neyland, for example.
Right.
Okay, if they're responding, well, for the guys to drive up the hill to get into the rig, if they're employed in Eureka or Arcata, well, that's half an hour before they're at the station.
Yeah, so they're...
The
they're,
turnaround time, you know, now it's an hour later, you know, don't bleed too fast.
Right.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, so their chief has a duty vehicle and has a lot of equipment on it, so they'll respond directly. And we do auto aid with Neyland Fire, so we'll go up there.
So you guys will run the mountain?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we go, I believe, 3 miles up Greenwood Heights Road and about 2 miles up Neyland.
Is there like a turnaround there?
Not a very, well, at Greenwood Heights, yeah, it's a good turnout.
Yeah, Neyland, maybe it's that turn. There's one turn there that kind of swings wide.
Yes.
Before you go up.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good spot.
Yeah. Unless you're 2 feet beyond.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you just keep
you're the
going.
Guy right around the turn. Yeah. Oops.
You just keep going.
Yeah. Oh, there's been a fair amount of discussion about Measure Z and who gets what and where and how much. Do you think, I mean, you're on the committee.
Yes.
Do you think there's any additional sympathies to the volunteer fire departments because of how they responded to the earthquake or earthquakes at the end, at the turn of the year, and what the volunteer departments were able to put together and respond?
I do think so. I think for a lot of firefighters, we're often I don't know if the silent saviors, that sounds really
taken for granted.
Well, yeah, we're not really thought of until we're needed. And in this case, the need was significant, and it was the duration was, significant as well. And so it just reinforced for people, reminded them, you know, what an amazing service that is, especially in this county, because we have 37 volunteer agencies that are making this work all the time. And I've worked with almost all of them in my 25 years here, and, you know, they're all incredibly dedicated to their community. And they do whatever they can to help their neighbors and their family members. And I'll tell you, you know, I've only responded to a few people that I know during my career. And for that to be your regular duty, the burden that puts on you, you know, over time, I mean, that's never talked about or
recognized. Yeah, it's always there on your shoulder.
Yeah, you just, yeah. You know, because you're going to be responding to your friends, family, and neighbors in those smaller communities.
That's what I would think that the... Burden, I don't know if burden is the right thing, but that probably isn't. But one of the challenges is, you know, you're going, oh, that's so-and-so's house.
Yeah.
Or I recognize that car.
Right.
Those types of things. So I would think it's more challenging because it's also personal.
Yeah.
You know, if you're in a metropolitan and you're just responding to a fire or a car crash and you don't know who the players are, it doesn't matter. It's a lot less personal then.
Yeah, you have a lot less of an emotional kind of connection or effect from it, that's for sure.
Are you able to, let me restart that. How are you able to desensitize somebody, but not desensitize them so much that becomes a problem also?
I think the biggest way to do that is just to help them know that, to anticipate that. I mean, most of us, you know, when you put your gear on, it's almost like an armor that you're assuming that role. And just kind of a side note, I've seen incidents when I wasn't requested to respond to them a few times in my life. And it's an entirely different thing to just come upon something or see it happen right in front of you as opposed to being called to respond to it. Because
private instead of professional.
Well, yeah, because you're able to anticipate it. You have your armor on. You're responding in that role. But if it just happens in front of you, you're not protected. You're not protecting yourself that way. So the big two biggest things I think is just to say to folks, when you become a new firefighter or regularly, just remind people that when you respond, you have to be prepared to deal with heavy stuff, and here are some tools to deal with that. And then the second thing is helping people be aware of the toll it will take on them over time or even immediately, and then give them tools to deal with that, because the mental health aspect of firefighting is something that has never been really dealt with, and now we're becoming much more aware of it. I think I've told you here before, we've seen that effect with our people, with suicides, with retirements, with other issues.
And do you guys use the same mental health professionals that the police department does?
We use them in a different way. We use the same company. We our mental health program is based on peer counseling. So we have people internally that have gone through a training on how to do peer counseling. And the whole goal with that is to create an immediate mechanism to just get help or talk to someone, because that's been a big barrier for people, because, you know, you want to be the stoic firefighter, you just handle stuff. And if you would bring it up in the firehouse, people would tell you just to, shut it up. Yeah, we don't talk about that. Yeah. Or they would just ignore it because it's really difficult to talk about. So preparing people for dealing with those things and giving them some tools of, you know, go work out, talk to someone. If it gets really bad, don't ignore it. Recognize the warning signs, you know, alcohol abuse. If you're just really frustrated and those mental health things build up. And if that's why we have days off, because it's not just the sleep fatigue. It's not just the physical burden. It's that mental, emotional thing that you have to detach from to be able to do your job well.
Yeah, to be able to come back the next time.
Exactly.
Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:45. We'll be back with more from Sean Roberts.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft Salad Dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Robertson from Humboldt Bay Fire. Sean, the tensions and the pressures that a fireman has, real, period, end of story there. But I think from the outside looking in, most folks don't see that. You know, we see the fire engine sitting in the firehouse.
Right.
We see the guys, you know, maybe mowing the lawn. Yeah, that kind of almost a bucolic existence. But maybe when they come back, somebody's out there trying to roll the hose up.
Yeah.
You know, those types of things, they don't, there's no outward signs of these things. Cops, yeah, you see it. You ambulance drivers, yeah, you know they're dealing with somebody who's in a tough stead. Fire guys, they're out mowing the lawn. How much of an evolution is it for somebody getting into fire service to understand, no, there are a lot of pressures here. You just don't see them.
Right. I think people may see them when we're on a fire and, there's stuff blowing up everywhere. And
the adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
But that's adrenaline. Everybody has those. Maybe not to the same extent. Things blowing up in front of you. And that.
Right.
But, I mean, there's a feeling of commonality there.
Yeah, I think for people coming into the job, you're excited about it. You've put in a lot of work to get there. Or, if it's not a paid career position, it's exciting, like you said. And it's when things don't go right that the burden starts. And then when, you see the bad parts. When I go to a fire now, I'm not thinking this is awesome and I'm having the time of my life. I'm thinking, because I have to deal with the homeowners, is this is a real negative impact. And, I've always heard, it's just a house. It's not a big deal. Well, if you've lost your house and your home, I mean, there's parts that you can't rebuild. And for anybody who's had, something stolen from you, or you've lost something, you know that feels, it just... There's an emptiness, yeah. And yeah. So, you know, it's a devastating thing, and the longer you do this work, the more you see that, and the more... And maybe you, I think you either become desensitized to it, but I haven't really seen that from people. If somebody's becoming so desensitized to this job that to me is a mental health issue where you're, you know, I mean, it's almost like a sociopathic thing. Most people continue the compassion, and the effect is that accumulation. So how do you deal with that? At times you either become jaded, and then hopefully you people recognize that and offer you some help, and I've seen that many times in my career.
And you accept it.
Yeah, or you just shift your perspective, and like many jobs, you engage in it in a different way, and you continue trying to do your job as best you can.
Kind of like this show.
Exactly.
Some days it's better than others.
That's right.
But we press on.
Yes.
Thanks for coming by, bud.
Thank you.
See everybody on Monday.